Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank y'all for tuning in to the NFL Player Second Acts podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Peanut Tillman. And as always, I got my homeboy with me. First off, this dude, he's actually younger than me, but he looks older than me. My guy, my homie, Roman second term Barack Obama Harper.
You know what? Thank you, Peanut, for that great introduction. The best thing about today's guest is that I know I look old because of my gray hair and everything like that, but this brother looks older than me. I'm telling you, dog.
He looked Isaac Hayes old.
So, Roman, you can't get that one, bro. Come on.
Now. I don't know. Now, first of all, here we go. Let me introduce you first. Let me give you a couple of your accolades. Let me give you your flowers real quick.
Read off this resume.
Yeah. Here we go. So, my boy. First round draft pick to the New Orleans Saints in 2009. First DB taken. What was it? 15 overall?
14.
14th overall. From the Ohio State University. My boy, my dog, Omega Psi Phi's finest, Malcolm Jenkins, 13-year NFL vet, 2-time Super Bowl champion. He won Super Bowl 44 with none better than myself. And a host of other great Saints players, won Super Bowl 52 with the Eagles in 2018. He is the co-founder of the Players Coalition with the NFL. He's a businessman. He's a debonair. This guy does it all. He's a philanthropist, a Harvard fellow, an activist, and so on and so forth. I can keep going. All I do is learn from this guy every time I see each other. And now that he's retired, we're actually a lot cooler. We got so much more in common now. Malcolm Jenkins, welcome to the podcast, bro.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me.
Big Jack, what's going on, boss? You look like you at your offices right now, man. Where you at?
No, I'm actually at Parkway Northwest High School in Philadelphia. I just got done talking to them. We just launched this financial literacy program here through my foundation. So y'all are catching me in transition, man. I'm always busy. See, this the school bell right there.
No, that was perfect.
Are you having lunch up there? You know, everybody know the cafeteria lady. All we got is mashed potatoes and cone. So are you going to eat some cafeteria food?
I'm going to be honest. I used to take, so my parents just give me like, I was balling. So I think they gave me like $4 for lunch. Ooh. And I would spend $3, I'll get cookies. And then the other, I'll get some french fries. That was all I ate in high school. Three cookies, fries and French fries.
Is it a private school or a public school? Because public school that's probably a little bit different.
Always public school.
Yeah.
I went to one public school early, like from pre-K to second grade. It was a was an all black private school called Chad School in Newark, New Jersey. Like, imagine Wakanda University. Like, that's what it was. That's what it was. And it was like, it was awesome. No. We talked to our, we wouldn't say like Miss or Mrs. It'd be Brother Johnson or Sister Penny.
That's what they was being taught.
Right on.
Black national anthem every morning. Like,
that's dope.
That's awesome. That was the only private school I've been to. Everything else was public.
That's so cool.
So you just came from somewhere, right? I know you just came from vacation, right? I know you were in Europe. You traveled a couple places. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it wasn't vacation. I was just at the one of the things I've been trying to do to stay away from the game is like find some other hobbies. And art is something I've always been around, but like trying to take it more serious about collecting. And so I was out in London at Frieze, the art fest out there. That was my first time going to that. It was amazing. Then caught a train and went to Paris to check out another artist that I really love. One of my favorite artists, his name is Tabaris Stratton out of the Bahamas. Phenomenal artist doing some great stuff. He had this sculpture of Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz. Yeah. Obviously, you know, that struck a chord with me, but it's just phenomenal. Put it in the way of Michelangelo. It's awesome.
I've been to your place in New Orleans, your new place. And so you have art all over the things. And I know, like, how has art become your passion? I want you to kind of go into that. Me and you talk about these things all the time. You know, you're always trying to, you know, keep your mind going and things like that. But how is art really just taking off on your own?
Well, I think I like anything that has like to do with storytelling. And you know, like I said, I grew up around art. So my aunt's an artist. So I saw paintings on the walls like as early as I can remember. My earliest memories, I saw, you know, these paintings. I remember you ever saw the Sugar Shack, Eddie Barnes? It's the Marvin Gaye album cover. So the Sugar Shack. I saw that painting on my wall from as early as I can remember. My aunt did a cover of it. I thought it was her painting for the longest until I got older and learned about who Ernie Barnes was, a former NFL player that turned artist and is now one of the like goats of, you know, black artistry. But it's just the idea of being able to think about something and articulate it and express it in a way that might be nuanced. You know, so we sit here and we were exposed only to sports kind of outlets where if we want to talk about these other things, we're at the mercy of like the writer or the journalist who's, you know, has an agenda. But being able to express yourself in ways that aren't always with words. So whether it's your fashion, whether it's film, music, art, like all of those things to me are just storytelling. And when I get to sit with an artist and they break down why they used this material, you know, like we'll say, oh, this is trash. And it's like, exactly. They use trash specifically to tell this narrative. Like, and all of those things to me, once you understand it, like change how you value it. And all of a sudden you're attached to these pieces because they speak to a narrative. It's like listening to a good song when a writer says something that like he articulates the feelings that you had, but you could never like put it like that. Yeah. It's the same thing with art. Once you learn how they're doing it, you're like, I could never make that or do that in that way. And it's so interesting that they took that narrative and perspective on, whether it be sculpture, abstract, paintings, all of that.
Now, do you do any artwork yourself, though, being that you are a fan of it? Can you paint? Can you draw? Can you sculpt?
No, I can't paint, can't draw, can't sculpt. But what I have started to figure out is like, yeah, like, all right, well, what are, and this is what I think is important, like for every black man, this is one thing that we don't do, is we need like some creative outlet, like in general. And so one of the things I started to do was photography. Like I just picked up a camera, showed myself how to do it. And so, you know, I'll go out, I'll take pictures, edit them, taught myself how to do it. And I have a photo wall, all of like my own stuff. And I'm working on some things, you know, here or there, but you got to learn kind of the basics. And I'm like, I'm not going to put nothing out there or it might just be only for me to see. It's just my own little private thing. But yeah, I think I am looking for ways to like, the more you get around it, you start to learn how they do it.
Yeah.
Okay. You play around with it, dabble a little bit, but I'm no artist, but.
What's one of the best pieces you've taken
I can send it to you too. I got this picture. I was in Morocco, mm-hmm. and I went through the markets in Madrid, and you go into this is guys with snake charmers and stuff. This guy, he takes a snake and he's like draping it like over his face and he's like kissing it. I took a picture of it like real close, like edit up. It's like phenomenal. Like it's like my favorite picture that I've taken. I was like, okay. Everybody who comes and sees it, they're like, oh, who took that? And I'm like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I like to I like to check that piece out. Send it to Rome or whatever.
Yeah,
I got you, dog. So Mal, now that you're back in the States, you went on vacation. You're enjoying yourself. You're going all over. I know most of these places, but so what you been up to, dog? I mean, I know the girls back in school. So what you up to?
Half of my time is just being dad. Like I'm at home. I'm in the school drop off lines. I'm in the pickup lines. Soccer.
Oh, practice. Tell them how you cooking it up too, because I've been over there. You was cooking dinner, dog. It looked nice.
Yeah, it's a full time job, yo. Like you know, I'm a single dad with no nanny, so I got two girls. I'm like, we up at in the morning breakfast. Clothes to school. I get my little work in, you know, work out, do whatever I got to do between them. Then it's pick up and it's like clockwork. You know, you pick them up, here's a snack, change, get to soccer practice, get home, homework. While they doing homework, I'm cooking dinner, get dinner. We got about 30 minutes to chill, watch something, and then they sleep.
And how old are your kids?
They're 8 and 4.
8 and 4.
Okay. Yeah, so that's the majority of my life, about half of the month. And then the other half of the month, either doing some of the things that I enjoy. So it's like the art stuff or it's bouncing around. Then a couple of smaller gigs, like just talking about the game of ball, little podcast stuff here or there. But yeah, working on more creative stuff than anything else, to be honest.
So after 8 months of retirement, bro, you watching football.
Mm-hmm.
Do you miss it? Do you have any urge to play again?
Not at all. Not at all. I had one urge. I went to my first game, finally, Saints versus Raiders. And in pregame, I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's the pregame. That's really it, though.
I was like, I could almost feel my pads on my body. I was like, yeah, I could play. I could play right now. But after that, like, nah, I really have not had any, like, second guesses or thoughts of like playing the game. I actually enjoy this vantage point of being a fan and like and having no control over what's happening.
Yep.
Makes it like the anxiety of that, like the tension in the moments. I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
You know what's real funny, Matt, was that I didn't know how hard it was being a fan. Like you just mentioned about the anxiety. Like when you have no control, it's way worse. Like
it's being terrible. A fan, it's way terrible.
Being just on the field, like you only control, you're only just concerned with your job. You're like, bro, I'm just trying to, I don't have time to be worried about none of that.
I'm such a fair weather person as a fan. Like I'm in the first quarter, like, yo, they down 14. It's over with, yo. This game is dying. And like as a player, I was the guy that was always like, man, we can always come back. Like this is
super positive.
Super positive, no matter what.
Optimistic all the time.
As a fan, I'm like, this is the first quarter. This is over with.
All right. So when did you know it was time to retire? Because we had talked about it, but I didn't know you was going to pull the trigger. And when you did, it was just like no hesitation, almost like your tweet game.
Yeah, right. I mean, it got easy, yo. I'm going to be honest. It just got easy. And it's like, it's taking up too much time. It's like a lot going on, like from family life, like, yo, you sacrifice a lot of it. Like, mm-hmm. I want to spend more time with my family. I want to spend more time doing all these things. But like, and football has taught me so much. Mm-hmm. Like, you learn, like, literally to be a professional in the game, like the nuances of the game. Like, it takes a certain skill level to get there. And then you start to realize that, like, if I apply these same tools to anything else in life,
yeah,
I'm gonna succeed. Like, we know how to build teams, we know process, we know discipline, like, we understand evaluation, we know how to deal with failure, how to come back from failure, how to stay focused and success. Like, these are all things that people in the real world struggle with. CEOs and people who build businesses don't have these tools. And we've been doing this since I was 7. Mm-hmm. And so it almost started to feel like football is what I love, but it's not what I'm built to do. And everything that I'm built to do is like pulling on me, like it's calling me. And the game of football really just got easy. Roman, I remember you told me this when I was young. And I was trying to learn how to play strong safety. I'm like, man, how do you read so fast if it's run or pass? And he's like, I'm like, what are you looking at? He was like, I mean, it's a feel. Like, it just sound different. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? He's like, man, you just feel the game after a while. And it's like, okay. And then probably 2-3 years later, like I reached that point where like I would feel the game. And it was like, oh, and I kind of knew it was never like the last 2 years I played, I was not nervous at all for any game. Yeah. And it was like, okay, it's probably time. I've done everything I needed to do. I can still play. I love competing, but it's like I'm cheating people. You know me, Roman. I'm an all-in type of person.
1,000%.
Like, all in. If you got me here. And so, and if I can't be like that, it's like, then it's probably time for me to move to something else.
I was probably smart. It's funny that you say the whole the nervous. And I think one of the unique things, though, about the way you retired is you did it on your term. Like, mm-hmm. you did it. Most people don't retire when they're ready. It's either they didn't get picked up or they got injured and that was it. I was kind of the guy that got injured because I still wanted to play. But after I tore my ACL in Carolina my last year, I was like, man, I'm going on like 34, 35. I just tore my ACL. I think I'm going to have to call it a day because no one's trying to pick up an old guy. And you also said something, how Rome, when you were younger, Rome really took you under his wing and he told you and, you know, gave you some great advice. What has Rome taught you that you're kind of using today, right now?
Roman taught me a lot in leadership.
That's crazy to say because Malcolm was the captain. Like, I hated that. Like, I was never – that's crazy to me to hear that, but I was always like, well, I don't need all that stuff. Go ahead, Malcolm. Sorry.
And not leadership in, like I'm going to stand in front of the entire room, but, like, man-to-man leadership.
Yeah. Like, he got okay, that old man wisdom.
Like, I've seen, like, okay, when Tracy Porter is, you know, our main corner, he's our guy, and then he's just late one too many times. So we're like at first it's like, we don't care. You know, but the coaches can care how they want. But now it's like, oh, you do something, and now it's like a player-only meeting, and you're too late. Like, instead of being a thing where most of us know how to call people out in a big room, you do that because you got backup. You got other people to jump on as well. But, like, I'm just watching, and he'll hang back and be like, hey, Tracy, let me, like, stay here. And then to have a man-to-man conversation about, like, oh, no, like, we need more out of you. And Roman's not the captain. He's not, like, the dude with the C on his chest. He's not the – and it's, like, oh, the ability to meet people, like, where they are, understanding who's who.
Yeah.
And then when I got to Philadelphia, like, I was, like, that guy. And I started to realize a lot of the stuff that Roman used to say to me, I had to say to Rodney McLeod. He was a young dude just like me, came through Greg Williams defense. So super cerebral, like we spoke the same language, but he thought he knew everything and would want to question the coach on everything. Like, you're not perfect. You're going to ask the coach every single question. And I remember Roman used to tell me, he's like, bro, coach. And then Crime Dog was our DB coach my last year in New Orleans. And they said, bro, you're clearly smarter than everybody. That's fine. But, like, for this meeting to go, like, you can't disrupt the meeting. Like, you want to do this on your own time, go upstairs with them early, like, on Tuesday and get all of that out before we get to the meeting on Wednesday because the other people are not learning. Like, the guys who don't know what you know aren't learning because you, like, it's causing confusion. And I'm like, okay, fine. Like, I finally shut up and just, like, okay, learn how to do it in a different way. And when I got to Philly, I was able to talk to Rodney about those things because I had been through it. And I just bust out laughing. Right. Rodney said all the same things that I was saying. And it's like, okay, I'm prepared for this.
It's funny how growth changes you, though. You know what I'm saying? How it prepared. Rome was the same way in Philly, or excuse me, not Philly, in Carolina. But Rome would do that with Benet, Trey, Jano, Josh Norman. Like, I think Rome was, again, were you a captain in Carolina?
No.
Yeah, wasn't a captain in Carolina, but he was the, I guess, because you had all that great. They just kind of looked.
Right, just like, he got to have
you just, he's just like, yo, he's like the old guy off of the show Kung Fu. You know, like, they just always would flock to Rome for some of that old school advice. And it was just like, yeah. Hey, and they used to call him Unk, too.
They
was still like, OG, Lou. Lou Young?
Yeah, listen, now that we gave Roman some flowers, let me let me put some parameters back on this now. That was the one example that I had. I was like, Roman was also the reason why I didn't get along with a lot of coaches. Because he didn't walk into the room. I'm a young guy. I'm a rookie. Roman's probably what?
I hope you tell this story. This is like the best one ever. Yeah.
Fifth year player, something like that. And he's like a fourth year player. And, you know, coaches are nitpicking on like little things. We're undefeated in my rookie year. We're like 10-0. And the coaches are still trying to like, you didn't set the edge right here like you're supposed to on the numbers. You set it out here. It's like, bro. And they gave him a bad grade. Like, and he balled out and got like a bad grade. So now Roman's mad. And then Dennis Allen, the head coach now of the Saints, said he was DB coach. And he said something like slick. And Roman was just like, man, I'm just saying, y'all here nitpicking. He's like, nitpicking. He's like, you say it all the time. This game is played by players. Coach is just coach. I said, ooh, I'm in the back of the room. Like, what you gonna say? Coach didn't say nothing else after that. But it was like, he was also that guy. He playing Call of Duty all day. I was like, yeah, this is Roman Harper. Gray hair does not mean wisdom. They just assumed that when he got to Carolina.
Well, he definitely had it though, because I'm not gonna lie, he used to put the old schools. You and Kurt, I would meet y'all in the morning, and that's how we would watch film. You know what I'm saying? It's true professional. And it sounds like, I think one of the biggest jumps that rookies don't have is learning how to be a professional when they go from college to the NFL. And it always takes, for the most part, an older guy, a veteran, to give the younger guy some tips, some advice on how to watch film, how to practice, how to eat, how to take care of your body, treatment, so on and so forth. Malcolm, what would your advice be to NFL players and or athletes in general just about being a professional?
I mean, you know, every time you come into this game, you want to play it as long as you can, right? Yeah. And there's certain things that like will help you last in the game that have nothing to do with football. Professionalism is one of them. Like the ability, like they tell you all the time, accountability and availability are like two of the major things when it comes to teams evaluating players. You can be as talented as you want, but if I can't hold you accountable, or I don't think that you can just do your job, and you're not healthy, then no matter what your talent is, I can't use you.
Right.
And so it's really just about coaches are always evaluating you. Like, it's not just on the field. It's how you walk around the building. It's, do you take notes? Do you make new mistakes? Are you a repeat mistake offender? Like, all these things have nothing to do with like how well you tackle, how well you catch the ball. It's how you hold yourself and carry yourself and improve yourself. Coaches are not that good in the NFL. I'm like, I know this is a podcast for this, but I don't believe that coaches are that good. It's like, how many coaches have actually taught you like a new technique that took you to the next level as a player? A lot of it is self-governance, right? Like if I mess up, I got to stay after practice and improve myself. That like real improvement comes on your own in the off season. It comes on your own time. Your preparedness for the game comes on your own time. All of that stuff.
You don't think the coaches help you learn the game though? In a sense, maybe not technique, but just like learning the game itself.
Some do, but I would say out of the amount of coaches, I played for six coordinators. Mm-hmm. Under that, you had like different, you know, DB coaches. I didn't learn a game from the majority of them. I probably learned the game from like Greg Williams, Jim Schwartz, Rob Ryan, I learned the game from. And then Corey Undlin was a DB coach that I had in Philadelphia who could have been a D coordinator. And then Dennis Allen, I did learn some football from him, like some stuff. But like, you're not learning none of the stuff I was learning was helping me cover Calvin Johnson.
Agreed.
And the professionalism is like, understanding that that's your responsibility. Like that is not, it's not the coach's responsibility. I mean, technically it is, but nobody cares at the end of the day. Like on Sundays, like you being prepared, being healthy and being ready to perform, they're going to look at you for that responsibility. They're not looking at the coaches on that. And those who can do it consistently tend to stay around longer.
So I'm just going to throw it out there, Mal. What's it like to own a sports team, bro?
I mean, let's calm down here, guys. It's stressful. So I was minority owner in Burnley Football Club. we were in the Premier League last year and got relegated.
Oh,
yeah. So it was rough. It was in dramatic fashion too. It came down to like the last match of the year. It's going back and forth. Yeah, we got relegated. We're in the Champions League, but was the Premier League soccer, not in the Champions League. Burnley. It's awesome though. I mean, you know, as athletes, we don't even imagine. It's like I barely thought I was going to play in the NFL. Like I didn't even have dreams to do that. So to be in a position where you're like a minority owner in a sports club in another country is just that's a big accomplishment for me and my team. And it's really just like if I look at my businesses, I'm in so many different things, like on purpose. And just
being able to tell us about a couple of them.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm in everything from real estate to franchising. We own over a dozen quick service restaurants and getting ready to blow that to over 30 in the next 2 years. We've got a venture capital fund called Broad Street Ventures doing investments into growth and late stage companies. That's been going well. Got my own production company. We just acquired and just invested into one of the largest distilleries in Pennsylvania. So we've got the spirits and all of that. We're all over the place. Real estate, sports groups, and sports is one of the things I also wanted to invest in. Being an athlete, like we know how valuable we are, like as athletes in the sports. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, how do we not invest into having some kind of equity into you know, that sports space where we know athletes, we know how to build the brand, we know how to add value to an organization, because I've had 13 years of professional experience and even more when we go back to how long we've been playing ball.
So how do you, I mean, I know you said you retired, you were done and family time with the kids and you gave us that whole schedule. Like, how do you have time to do all of this with all your businesses? Like the business
team
side.
The best thing I've ever done in my life was build a team. Mm-hmm. While I was playing. And so I figured out ways to, you know, most of us, when we come into the league, we are on a conveyor belt, right? It's like,
right.
All right, get an agent, get a financial advisor, get all these people who they tell you you're supposed to have. Great. I did that as well. And then eventually, as I've gone along, I just started to realize, like, all right, who's making money off of me and who can I replace? Like, how do they make money? It's like, well, oh, I've got a friend who can handle my finances. They do it for another company, you know, and they're working a 9-to-5 to do that same job for another company. I was like, well, as soon as we can build enough up together over here and we can afford to pay you full time, leave that and come do it for me. And then we'll build that. Boom. We have the franchising. Same thing with the investments. Then it's the real estate. And so I know I can't do all these things alone.
Right.
So I'd rather share in the equity and then have other people join me and build it. And that's how I'm able to get into all these other things, is that I'm just taking people and evaluating who I think is in the best position to really like take off and run in that space. And I'm equipping them with the capital, the leverage in my social capital, like the doors that I can get into. I'm bringing them into that space to do that for me. And I was able to do that while I was playing, while everybody cares about who you are. They want to let you in the door. I'm just bringing my people with me. And then I retire, I'm sitting around a group of five people and we've got stuff that we can do on our own. Like, we're not knocking down doors looking, you know, to go work for somebody else. We've got all of that in place and it's about just scaling it now. And that's the biggest thing. That's probably the best thing I've ever done.
You know, I gotta give him out credit, because I remember like his rookie year, second year, he was telling me about these apartments he owned in Columbus. I'm like, what? You already did that?
I ain't gonna take credit for that. But that was part of my team though.
Like, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, he was already doing these things at an early age, where when you first come in, everybody's telling you, man, you gotta save, you gotta be smart, you gotta do this and just focus. And Malcolm was already doing these things. That's why I just wanna let him know that, man, this started forever ago.
I've been blessed to have people around me that have made me challenge the way that things are done, or made me think about these things in different ways early enough that now here I am. I can walk away from the game, because the decision for me in my retirement is like, can I walk away from the money?
Yeah.
And that really is what it, like, that's the hardest thing. And I'm like, I don't ever want to be in a position where I'm afraid to walk away from money. And I feel like I got to be there only for it. And so that was like, okay, let's move. And luckily I've been in a position where I can. But like to Roman's point though, that didn't start like 2 years ago. That's been
doing that for a minute. Yeah. That's what's up. So I know 5 years ago you started the Players Coalition.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've been very vocal about kneeling, national anthem, how you know, African Americans, how we could be and be more included in a lot of things, and specifically police, law enforcement, just stuff that's happened around the United States within the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. There's been this huge shift. Has the Players Coalition been going the way you felt it should?
I think it's
been since its creation.
Yeah, since creation, I think the coalition has honestly exceeded my expectations tenfold. And so I think there's a misunderstanding about the coalition as well, is that it's a program that's like underneath the NFL, and it's right. not. These are two separate entities. The Player Coalition, what we did was do something that's never been done before. We looked at a bunch of group of athletes that wanted to be socially engaged, wanted to use their platforms to have some real impact in the way our society is structured. Mm-hmm. And they had the idea to do that together. And they would create an organization that was completely built by players and completely run by players. All of the decision-making comes from players, that's separate from the union and separate from the league, that would make these decisions on how we push the money that we got from the league. We decide where that money goes. We also build a organization that a vehicle for players who now want to be involved. They don't have to, you know, try to, their only option is not to push against their team clubs and do these things in a locker room or on the field. They can contact us, get all the education they need, get all the resources they need. We can organize the events that they want, whether it be in their city or their hometown, so that the work can continue. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've expanded to not only just the NFL, and it started with 12 NFL players and expanded to hundreds that have been engaged in our work. But we also expanded to 12 other professional sports leagues. So okay. That's WNBA, soccer, baseball, like all of these groups have now created their own coalitions, and they're underneath nice. Our sister, we're the umbrella company to all of that. So our example and our resources have turned into not only work that we can do, that mm-hmm. is we've given away millions to grassroots organizations that do the work every day, but it's also catapulted and empowered other athletes across different, you know, sports and sections. I'm still very involved from the mm-hmm. high level stuff, but what we recognize is that politics and our impact is more regional, which is yeah. perfect for the way that athletes are, right? Mm-hmm. So we focus a lot on kind of these national debates and national conversations, but really the power lies state and local. And that's where we're most powerful, right? Is where our fan bases are. So I'm able to do so much work in Philly and get so much done in Philly that I can't do in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's mm-hmm. been about the particular communities that you live in. How are you being engaged there? And so for me, yeah, all my work is focused on the Philadelphia area. That's kind of my territory. And then recruiting, like, how do we get the next generation of leaders to take this up? Because Anquan Boldin, you know, the co-founder, he retired in order to help us build it. And he built it up while I was still playing kind of mm-hmm. the voice of it all. But now I'm retired. Right. And and times and circumstances are different. And so there is a need for this next voice, these next leaders to carry this out into the forefront, because there are a lot of important things that are happening socially in our communities and in multiple communities that will need voices of athletes, that will need a collective and no better person to serve them than those next generation leaders.
To be in the coalition, do you have to be an active player, or are there No. retired players?
Oh, no. So, well, yeah, we're focused with athletes, but
right.
But we have both retired and active, and it's really a spectrum of how you want to get involved. Like and this is why we built it. It's like whatever you want to do. If mm-hmm. it's just, hey, I want to get information on what's happening in my city that I should be aware of, or I want to, you know, sign on to a letter with some other people, or all I got to do is sign my name, or I want to send a tweet. Or if you want to full out, like, I want to have a town hall and organize, you know, meetings with politicians, whatever it is you want to do, we can set that up for you. And that's what the coalition is a resource for players to get active however it is they want.
And how do they reach out to you to get those resources?
Yeah, playerscoalition.org is the website. It's got all of our information, all of our programs, the pillars and the things that we stand for. We're doing things in education and economic justice, criminal justice reform, police and community relations, like the whole gambit. So it's not even just like one thing. There's multiple topics you can get involved in. There's multiple levels. And even if it's just you just want information to figure out, like we just had an election. If you want to know information about the local candidates, you know, and what's going on in your city, and you just need that, we're a resource.
Got you. So you've been extremely vocal your career. Were you always kind of like the vocal guy, or was that something that you kind of had to grow into? Where did that, and you got the name Malcolm. So where did that come from? That, and you got the egg.
I was your brother Malcolm.
I mean, obviously like I've been raised obviously with a very detailed kind of history of just like Black people, what we are capable of and kind of what we've been through. And honestly, not even enough. Like for me, as an adult, I'm still on a journey of just learning kind of how we've arrived to where we are. I'm actually a person who's very introverted and who does not like conflict. I'm somebody that like when it's time, I'll do what needs to be done. And so when you see me raising my hand and being so loud and vocal, you have to understand that that's because I believe that this needs to be done. It's not what I want to be doing. I don't want to invite these, this energy, this friction. But if it comes down to like on a football field, if I got to tackle this guy who's bigger than me, or I got to take on this pulling guard, well, I'm gonna find out. You'll see how much I love my teammates based on how I make that decision. And for me, I love my communities. I've been raised to love my family and the people that I come from. I have a lot of pride in it. And I have a lot of understanding that we as a people are not innately violent, stupid, or inadequate. So when you look at those symptoms coming out of specific communities, you have to look at, well, what is causing that? If I don't believe that these people are just like that, then there are reasons that explain all of it. And if we can get to those reasons, then we'll get to the core and stop trying to stop the symptoms of it all. And so for me, it just like any captain, sometimes you just got to stand out front, take the bullets just to keep this thing focused, keep everything going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, that was what was needed from not only me, like Colin Kaepernick obviously took a knee, Eric Reed and Mike Thomas. So you had voices all over the league that were really stepping up to the plate and all of that. And my name gets attached to the coalition a lot, but it's a coalition, meaning there's a group of guys of that people. Made decisions. There was a group of us that were in those negotiations, a group of us that made every decision that got us there.
Right.
And that to me is really like the most important part.
Brother Cenk, y'all stay tuned. We're going to pay a couple bills. We'll be right back.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
And I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah,
it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. After a little bit of commercial, we had to pay some bills. My man Peanut Tillman here with our guest today, Malcolm Jenkins.
Brother Jank.
There we go. Brother Jank or Brother Malcolm, however you want to go for it. NFL Players Second Acts Podcast. Thank you again, Malcolm. We got a couple quick hitters for you. All right, first thing comes to mind. Be ready for it. Some of these questions are going to be challenging. Some of them are just all for giggles, bro. Just being honest with you. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. What was the first thing you splurged on after you got drafted?
The first thing I bought was a 2009 Mercedes S550.
Oh, yeah, the S-Class Benz. I remember that bad boy.
It was all black. Yeah.
All black, everything. I love it.
Yep, stock rims, nothing. I ain't do nothing to it. All I did was take the windows.
Nothing else to it.
All right, I got nothing else for you. What was your go-to outfit for a prime time game?
So I always had I got my own suit company. So I always
have
Damari, based out of Philly. So so I always design something nice, 7 weeks planned out or 8 weeks at home.
Okay.
Hold on. So you would already have them laid out, like first day of school, like this is this week, this is this week.
Oh, yeah. Before the season, I'm like, hey, all right, this week we got a primetime game, week three. I need to have something fire for that. Got this road game. Yeah, you gotta have it all. You gotta have a plan. Cause I'm not trying to think about that, the day before the game, morning of the game. What outfit I'm gonna wear. Oh man. Let's get that done.
Well, shout out to Damari because I just ordered mine. Just came in the other day, so
it's about time.
If you could do it all over again, would you get the Q branded on your arm?
100%. I'm thinking about getting another one. I got one on my chest, and I got the double hit right here. Oh yeah, I would for sure.
Rome, step up.
Well, if you get double hitted, bro, again, I'll get one.
Ooh,
what it got to do with me?
It's for your brother.
I need somebody to hold my hand. All right, Mal.
No, you don't. All I did this one with no help. I ain't even, nobody hold me. Just put a book right there and just control, man. You got it?
Bro.
It's mental.
It is mental, though. You're right. It is mental. It's mental, bro. You're right.
You've been through how many NFL training camps? You trying to tell me you can't sit still? How many shots and MRIs and all kinds of stuff you done had? You can't sit still and get branded real quick?
Hey, man. Going to that male doctor is probably even worse, more mental than all of that. But, yeah. All right. Who is on your personal Mount Rushmore, Malcolm?
My Mount Rushmore would be Malcolm X, Jay-Z, Dave Chappelle, and James Baldwin.
Nice. Yeah. You're the first person that hasn't mentioned their mom or their dad.
They're not on my Mount Rushmore.
I get it. I'm just telling you the first one, bro. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, your answer.
I actually really like yours more than everybody else's, actually, because it was like real people that we can look up to and like not touch. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I appreciate that one more.
Yeah, I
can hug my mama. I get it.
I wish I would have liked that one. Knew more about James Baldwin growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
I wish they would have taught what he stood for, what he said, his writing, like just everything he was about. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have learned more about him as a kid in my youth than learning about him later in life as an adult. Now, I'm learning about him, and I know who he is now, but I wish to God they would have taught about this man in high school or in junior high or elementary school, because he has so much knowledge.
Yeah.
So much knowledge.
And the problem was that we talk about writers in general. He's one of the greatest American writers of all time. And we are just getting to a place where we probably accept him on a broader basis simply because he was homosexual.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, so we took all of that greatness kind of under the rug. But I'm glad that that, like you said, more people are getting exposed to his writing and just what he meant, even just for like the psyches of Black folks.
The brother was brilliant. Yes. All right, last question. Fill in the blank. Right now, my life is.
Right now, my life is an adventure. Football gives you so much structure. Every day they tell you where to go, what time the bus leaves, what time you eat, what time you rest. And now every day I wake up, I don't know what's coming. And it's like, and it's getting used to like being okay with that and then actually enjoying that part that like literally every day is something new to experience, is something new to learn. And having to like embrace that. So there's no such thing as good, bad. It's just like, this is just what today was and I'll get through it. And then tomorrow I go at it again. And that part to me is like, is so uncomfortable. But if there's anything I learned while playing ball is you got to get very comfortable being uncomfortable.
No doubt. And Malcolm, you're a person that has always lived in the black and white and me have always in the gray. So I'm enjoying hearing those words.
Which from is you. Not true anymore, which is crazy. Now I'm like, you're more black and white and I'm probably the gray one of both of us. Like,
right.
There's really no right.
But I love that growth in you, my bro. Yeah. You know, I love that. So Mal, man, tell me about this, your foundation event on Tuesday, November 29th.
Yeah, so that's Giving Tuesday. Actually, like I said, I'm right here now at a Parkway Northwest High School in Philadelphia. It's one of the schools that we've adopted to do a lot of our work in. And we are building out these financial literacy programs that will roll out here, but also in a few other partner schools in North New Jersey, Newark specifically. And this fundraiser that we're doing, the Fantasy Blitz, it's our first fundraiser back in the city since I left as an Eagle. So excited to be back. But obviously, we're going to be doing things around fantasy football. It's kind of this game show host. The Eagles are flying high right now. So a lot of
super high.
Super high. So, you know, the biggest thing is just trying to get around, enjoying football, having some fun. There'll be a bunch of former and current Eagles that'll be in the building. And we're raising money to build out these financial literacy programs that, again, I'm literally actively doing today. Just finished up one session, and we want to break this out to multiple schools. And the only way we can do that is when we raise the funds and get the support community to actually build that infrastructure.
That's what's up. Now I'm going to get you in trouble. Eagles or Saints? Pick one.
I mean, you know, it depends on what. You got to give me some context.
I can't. It's just pick one. Eagles or Saints?
I mean, if you're saying like, okay.
Don't give me the political answer. Eagles or Saints? That's it. Eagles or Saints?
Eagles or Saints? But I live in both cities. I live there. I have to lay my head there. So I can't just be saying crazy stuff. But I think for me, I tell people all the time, like I cut my teeth in New Orleans, but like where I made myself as a player and man was in Philadelphia.
That's what's
so
up.
I'm a little bit more tied to Philly. It's an hour away from home. Like that is me. Like that place is me. But obviously, like I love New Orleans, got a lot of history. Did two stints there.
Yeah.
They gave me a second row go round when I needed it. I went to go bet on myself. They were there for me. And I had the most fun probably the last 2 years. The last 2 years of my career were so unique for me. I had so much fun just playing the game of football that like New Orleans, it's like I can't just make that to say just Philly and ignore New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Much of an impression on me.
You know what, Mal, I appreciate that. I was hoping you would say Philly because I remember when you went up there, you were like, bro, I was there the first 30 minutes. People were honking horns at me. I felt like I was back, baby. I was back in Jersey. People were angry. It was awesome.
Get out of that Southern hospitality and everybody's being nice. I'm like, nah, I need a chip on my shoulder at all times.
Well, look, man, keep that chip on your shoulder, bro. You've accomplished so many great things. You're a great dude, an awesome person, amazing leader. Anybody that wants to learn more about life, entrepreneurship, any of these things, go out there and follow this guy, Malcolm Jenkins. All you do is win, my brother. So I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. I want to ask you guys to spread the word. Give us a rating, a review. I mean, make sure you be nice with that. And a follow on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening.
Hey, brother Jenk, appreciate you, boss.
Man, I appreciate both of y'all. I want all the listeners to understand, like, yo, y'all two, one, are just goats in the game. Like, whether you even gave talk to me, didn't, like, I just watched how y'all moved as individuals on the field, off the field, and y'all have affected an entire generation of players who watched that. So hats off to both of y'all. Appreciate y'all having me on for sure.
Appreciate you, boss.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.